Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 18. On my way to Sandy's, I put in a courtesy call to Dixie. Four horizontal furries coming into your office tonight, and seven new regular corpses. Replacing a couple of deputies at the coroner's office through the night, and probably indefinitely until we get clear of all of them. Also Dixie, I reported. I suggest binding the dead fuzzies with a rope. I don't want them loose. Two of them still have heads. Okay, she answered. Rick, I'll get my boots and be down to the office in about an hour, she said. Shall I expect you? I'll be in at the sunrise, I answered her. But fucking be careful. There's still more undead Chino beaver furries on the loose out there. They're at least smart enough to organize an attack. And they know the way around a morgue. And ours. Okay, see you in a few hours, she said. You be careful too, big boy. I know where you're going. We hung up and I set the phone down in my empty passenger seat. The events of the evening had provided me with a sort of plateau moment. The night had initiated some fundamental permanent dissolution of reality as I'd once thought I'd understood it. This brought to my mind two points of order. One, it was more of a punctuation event than some shocking revelation that, because the way things were supposed to be had already long since stopped being how things were. And two, while, yes, this was weird and, yes, it was unfortunate that there was a significant body count, but it was liberating because it was, in fact, good news that, as my previous perspective and estimation of the world and how it works had been identified as incorrect, the result was now that my perception and understanding of the world was now less incorrect, if only even slightly less incorrect. Even if it was because I knew I could be sure about less. I pulled into Sandy's apartment lot. It was immediately clear there was a party going on. And it was a big change in setting and ambiance. The air was amber with tiki torch light. The whole property had a festive, beery atmosphere, a far, far cry from the bluesy death pall I'd left at the warehouse lot. The usual crowd was around the patio bar and courtyard. I moseyed over and a girl back there handed me a yellow can of lager, lit my cigarette, and gestured toward Sandy's apartment. I thanked her and headed that way. Sandy had a bit of a shiner from the elbow she took during the match with the Platins, many if not all of who were here now drinking beer and scrumming with the liquors in their crowd. I looked like the hatchet was fully buried, following the dusts up at the match between the two teams. Every so often, Sandy put her cold beer under her bruised eye and cheek. She smiled at me. Kitty smiled, too. A couple of the Platins smiled. That one dude who sits in Sandy's apartment during parties and plays her electric guitar sat again on the smoky couch with some other dude and several other Platins. The record player again spun a twangy B-side deep cut. What's the big idea bringing werewolves to our warehouse? Sandy ribbed me. Standing in the kitchen, she was arm in arm with one of the Platins, and they giggled and nuzzled each other. I realized she was tipsy, and it was the first time I'd ever seen her that way. Both she and her arm candy were drunk, like little sailors. But seriously, those girls are following you, Ricky, not us. Watch your back. I don't know exactly what my reasoning was, but anyway, this seemed like the wrong setting and wrong crowd for me to explain that I'd been involved in killing at least one of her zombified, furrified peers in the warehouse lot. Regardless, I didn't know what they knew about what had gone on in the parking lot. It was such a mess. It all happened so quickly, and it was so all confusing. I'm not sure what the actual teams actually saw, regardless of whether they were stalking me then or stalking me now or whatever. That is the werewolves. Kitty, who was not drunk, chimed in then. Sandy, baby, geez, he's had a rough night. Don't give him a hard time. We thought you weren't coming. What, said you had to stay and work overtime, mopping up our parking lot. Glad you finally made it. If you've got blood on your hands, go wash it off. Otherwise, this is our friend, Patchy Platten. She's become our darling since the match ended. Patchy Platten was the drunk girl who kept mugging with Sandy. Kitty and Sandy ordered me to Patchy. Me and Patchy threw the heavy beaded curtain into Sandy's humid, dark, pillowy sleeping quarters. We'll be in. Join y'all for nap time after we shut down the party, Sandy said. Patchy yanked at my coat. I figured what the hell's been a long night, live a little. Nap time. The sound of traffic woke me. Though it was still dark in Sandy's sleeper, it was about 9 in the morning. Sunday, 19 October. Well over a week since the initial nightclub web of incidents. I felt around, and there next to me purred Patchy, still sleeping like a foxy little log. Naturally, and as usual, Sandy was gone. Unusually, though, Kitty was gone too, and I stood and peeped into the living and kitchenette area, and there was nobody in there either. It was kind of nice. It had been a crowded bedroom last night, although I and Patchy had gotten most of each other, and Kitty and Sandy had mostly soaked in me and Patchy and worked on each other. Everyone had been exhausted and or intoxicated, and it had been late, so nothing lasted long, but it was hot fast and a nice, relaxing, cuddly, much-needed mid-autumn nap. Patchy popped up and pulled me back down. The girls must have already headed to their day jobs, she said. You mind driving me up to Renton, detective? No problem, Patchy. And please call me Ricky, I answered her. Okay, Ricky. But first you need to drive me home again, right in here, she said. She grabbed me with one of her legs like a skate-fed python. Patchy was awesome. I was tardy for Dixie, but she'd understand. Different shifts are different shifts, and no one can work all three ceaselessly. I drove the kilted Patchy up to Renton. Traffic wasn't bad. Being that it was Sunday morning, I dropped her off at her apartment. She wrote her number down in the notebook in the glove box and gave me a nice kiss. I gave her a card and watched her walk up and key the door before I pulled away. I got to the coroner's office about 10:30. Dixie had been there since about 4. She had the 4 Chino Wolf women spread out up on tables in the cooler with their hands tied just in case. Any funny business were to occur. The 7 regular dead were back there too in various states of moot disarray. She poured me some coffee. I'm about done here. Gonna leave those 2 deputies here and go home to what's left of my weekend. Quite a shitstorm you boys cooked up last night, eh? What the hell, Rick? Well, basically, Dixie, there is such a thing as werewolves, I said, looking back at her. But it wasn't like I had to sell that to the woman who'd been autopsying them all week. I think we're all going to have to come up with new reasons for why we even bother, ever. All this business changes things. Lady, particularly if it doesn't stop. Even if it does stop, the damage to reality as we know it is well done. So it doesn't really matter if it continues or not. Life as I knew it is over. But life's life. I fully take your point. She said, if the werewolf to slick-bodied corpse ratio remains a rich reality at this office, it draws into question why I should ever bother coming into work anymore either. Certainly changes the definition and scope of the work, at the very least, she said, even if it doesn't stop. What do you think it will? It might, I said, even if it does, though, I think something else funky will take its place in some form or another, I answered her. Normal as we knew is a thing of the past, my dear former wife. I looked at the 4 furry bodies with hands bound by sheriff's office rope. I looked at the other 7, some of whose faces I vaguely recognized from the warehouse match the night before. I walked Dixie to her car, and on our way out, we passed the 2 deputies with shotguns. They were watching TV in the front of the office, but they were also very visibly aware of what they were guarding against. For some reason, the drizzle had stopped and a foggy, blurry sun cooked through the damp air. It was about noon. I drove to the office, which seemed to be empty. The administrative wing of which seemed to be empty, but for me. I phoned Wilson at the Oakland PD to let him know that we had 4 of his morgue escapees in our deep freeze now. I left a message with his dispatch, and he phoned back within a few minutes. Black and pink miniskirts, black and white plaid sports support tank tops, and top-to-bottom furry, I said. Your girls. Attacked the crowd after a derby match here between Tacoma's Davy Jones Liquors and the Seattle Platinum Switches. We re-killed 4 of them. 2 of them had their heads removed by shotgun. And there were 7 civilian deaths, all up here at the Pierce County Coroner's Office with their deadhounds bound under shotgun surveillance. I told Wilson that the rest of the team were still quite handily at large. Well, we're glad to be rid of them, but of course I wouldn't wish such a thing on you all up there, Wilson answered. Now we know they can reanimate not just once, but multiple times, and mind you, the last time we saw them, they weren't wolfy, only Firepipe Beaver had the shiny new coat. The rest were just dead girls, of course. They all disappeared from our body locker days ago, as you know. By the way, did you notice if Firepipe is one of the ones you bagged? I don't think so, I said. Going by uniforms, we apparently nailed Rolling Penny, Lightning Pelt, Plasma Hat, and the Milkmaid. Let us know if you want them back, seriously. I doubt it. I'd say, take them to your tow lot, douse them with petrol, and light them up. That might be the best bet for preventing another sequel, he said. And he made a real good point. One that McKinney, Dixie, and I made a reality of that night, as it turned out. Well, we ended up with their freak show ambulance, too, and I think we ought to torch it also, I said. That would be fine with me, Wilson answered. I scribbled out a note for Detective Smith, prompting him to update me on the case of Tina's murder come Monday, and headed to the diner for coffee and newspapers. The sun hid itself again as I made my way. I parked, pulled up a stool to the diner bar, and ordered coffee and eggs. It was a usual Sunday afternoon bustle in there. There was a stack of newspapers on the bar, which I pulled toward me and fought off my usual urge to avoid looking at the front page. Below the fold, a headline read, 11 dead in Davy Jones Liquor's parking lot brawl, below which was a color photograph of the buckshot's battered ambulance of the Chino-wheeled Beavers. The copy began as follows. Tacoma, Washington, Dateline. Arrival Woman's Bank Track Roller Derby Squad, the Chino Wheeled Beavers, last night. Wildly attacked fans, leaving a match between the Seattle Platinum Switches and the Tacoma Davy Jones Liquors. 4 of the Chino team members and 7 members of the crowd were killed during the incident. The Chino squad were dressed in wolf costumes, according to a Tacoma Police Department officer. Costumes my ass. I put the paper aside. In came Joe. The waitress brought him a coffee cup, and we sat and chatted with her. You get called out to that derby fight last night, Ricky? She asked. Yes, and what a mess, ma'am, I answered her. Joe chimed in, costumes, huh, Rick? He smiled. Of course, we knew differently. Dear waitress smiled and topped off our coffee. What are you going to do, Rick? Joe asked me. I was talking to Dixie about that just today. For now, I guess. The plan is just to plow ahead. Keep showing up to work. Keep trying to do my part in the world. Whatever may become of it, or whatever that role may be. Think about cleaning up my life. But the world does spin on its own, I answered him. And spin it does. It was getting dark. Dear waitress topped off her coffee again. Joe whipped out his flask. Dashed whiskey into our coffee cups. To costumes. He smiled.